listening to Opening the Harp Chakra, the podcast, bringing you beautiful, healing, magical harp music and talking with the artists that create it. I'm your host, Jay Michaels. Thank you for joining us. Today's guest is a friend of mine we met over 15 years ago at a Renaissance festival. She plays her harp at Renaissance festivals and other venues all over the country and has a new CD, There in the Quiet Greenwood, Kathleen Finnegan. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for having me here.
As far as you playing the harp, let's go back to the very beginning. How did that all start? What was the inspiration? What's the story?
Well, I actually have a couple of different stories, and I think really it's not because they are opposed to each other or even that one's not true. It's just it came at me from several directions. I don't remember a time I didn't want to play the harp. It's like from my earliest memories, I already wanted to play the harp. I have no idea where that came from. I come from an Irish family in which nobody else plays the harp. But you see it, you're kind of exposed to it. That may be my original exposure to it. But I lived in a very small town in Oregon, and we didn't have a harp teacher locally. But my parents had a piano, so they sent me to learn to play the piano, and that was great. And I enjoyed it, but it never really made me not want to play the harp. About when I was in college, where we had a harp program, I mentioned to a roommate, gosh, I've really always wanted to play the harp, but now I'm kind of busy. And she said to me, you're either going to do it or you're always going to want to. And that was like kind of, okay, I need to take that step now. I also was working for a company that that supported the arts in the town that where I was in college. And there was a certain day in the year where if you wore a button, the arts company or the arts foundation in that town would give a button to anybody who worked for companies that were major supporters. And you could go into any of the places that received funds from them, buy anything you wanted for 50% off. So I bought my first harp.
Nice.
Yeah.
When did you transition into playing the harp at Renaissance festivals?
I originally played, I was living in Charlotte at the time, Charlotte, North Carolina, and I was driving down one of the freeways near downtown, and I saw a great big billboard advertising the Carolina Renaissance Festival. And on that picture was, who is now a wonderful friend of mine, a harp player there. Actually, he's retired at this point. Thank you, Dale. And he played kind of an elf character with a traditional harp. And he just looked amazing on the billboard. But I looked at it and said, oh, they hire harp players. So I mentioned it to a friend of mine. She said, yeah, I think they do auditions somewhere. So I found out where those were. And I can't now remember whether my first year was 2002 or 2003. We have argument about it in the family, and we could go and find out, but we haven't. I guess we prefer to argue about it. Anyway, so I first started at the Carolina Renaissance Festival, playing just there at that festival for 2 or 3 years. And I first began traveling with the festival in 2006.
Well, we'll talk more about the festivals, but I'd like to hear some of your music.
Absolutely.
Your new CD, it's called There in the Quiet Greenwood. That's a great title. What inspired that title?
Thank you. As you know, coming up with titles, and it's like sometimes you gather your music first, and sometimes you have an idea first, and sometimes there's a title you want, and then you collect things to go to that, and then everything shifts as you work through the process. And I'm sure you've probably talked about that before, and you know exactly what I mean. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I had an idea, and it was partly from being in the Renaissance world, so to speak, where there's such such a convening of the worlds of fairy and human. partly in a cosplay sort of way, partly in what is fantasy and what is reality and what do you prefer and what even do those concepts mean. I also, I was an English major and I have a great love for poetry. So tooling along with that idea of the juxtaposition of the context of fairy and mortal, I also had stirring in the back of my mind the poem "The Stolen Child" by William Butler Yeats. Right. And probably a lot of people are familiar with that, where the fairy is calling the human child to come and join them in the fairy realm and to leave the human realm. And it's a great poem. Look it up if you haven't, "The Stolen Child." And it starts off just talking about all the wonderful things that the fairies do and that they experience and what it will be like. And then kind of toward the end of it, they're, instead of talking to the child, they're talking to each other about the things the child will be leaving. And you start to get an idea that maybe it isn't all fluff and moonlight and jewels, that maybe there's some amazing things in the human world that they're kind of not focusing on with the child because it might give them pause about leaving it. So I love that. Very Irish too. And I'm also a fan of another writer, an English writer called G.K. Chesterton, who wrote a poem in answer to "The Stolen Child" called "The Mortal Answers." And it's just also, you know, dealing with the questions that the stolen child sets up and kind of makes the case for humanity, so to speak. So I kind of wanted a CD with music that would show those two. So the idea of it is the fairy is stating its case and then the mortal answers that. And so that's why there is a side one and a side two to the CD, even though it's, you know, not really, it'll play all at once. But I tried to pick music that went with those ideas and gave some of the good and bad on both sides, almost as if they were before a judge. And "There in the Quiet Greenwood" is actually a phrase out of one of the poems, making it that it's sort of a battle of ideology that happened there in the beautiful quiet greenwood, that you think of a place of peace and rest, but it can also be a place of thought and a place to really compose yourself. I also tried to weave it into the whole CD into a journey. So I wanted it, the idea both visually and auditorily, to be sort of walking through. So you'll hear a flute in between some things. There's ambient music. Sorry, not ambient music, but ambient sound, like the rustling of leaves, the dripping of water at the end, the ocean sound as coming through the greenwood and out to the cliff of the sea.
Well, I queued up "Green Sleeves" to play first. It's a beautiful Renaissance song. Can you tell us about your lovely rendition?
Thank you. You know, a lot of people will come up to me and ask me to play "Green Sleeves." It still is my number one request. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they apologize. "Oh, I'm sure you've played it 1,000 times before and you're sick of it." And actually, I'm not. I think one of the reasons that it is such a familiar piece and such a popular piece is that, well, if you consider the situation over about the last 500 years, it probably is the number one piece of music in Western music literature.
Sure.
And with so many ways it can be played or sung or combination, began its life as a dance. And it's been a little bit of everything. It's had different words put to it. It's been attributed to many different people who had nothing to do with it, or a little bit to do with it, but didn't write it. And it's just, it's got a wonderful history. But in this case, I asked a friend of mine who is a singer, Bettina Queen. She has worked with me at the Georgia Fair and at the Carolina Fair, and just a wonderful, wonderful singer. And I feel interprets it beautifully. She also, in this, wrote a descant, and this was written by her, which is an answer from Anne Boleyn to Henry VIII, although he didn't write it, he is in this context speaking the words. And I just think it's a very interesting thing to think about, to put the two together. And a lot of people don't know what her answer might have been. And I think this is a wonderful way to explore that. But I tried to make it a real duet and the voice together with that descant and the statement by King Henry VIII.
from her latest CD there in the quiet Greenwoods, Greensleeves, from today's guest, Kathleen Finnegan. So, Kathleen, as we record this, you're getting ready to go perform at the Sherwood Forest Festival. That's in May in Texas.
That's correct. It's actually going on right now. It started in April, and I will be working the last half of it in May. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'll be doing something unusual for me. I normally play by myself, and I kind of just ambient stream of consciousness playing on the street, and people can come by and see me all day. And in this case, I'm going to be playing with Volgamut. If any of you are familiar with Volgamut, the German band that does a lot of different things, in this case, mm-hmm. We'll be playing mostly medieval music and playing quieter music, so we won't be involving the bagpipes this time. So if you're wondering about harp and bagpipes, no.
Right. There's definitely the two faces of Volgamut. There's the big bagpipe and drums, but there's also the small music, the quiet music that they do beautifully. And I'm glad you're joining for that. That's great.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I'll also be joining them on their Thursday evening live stream. So there's that. And I'm assuming, since everyone has been enjoying listening to and joining Jay for podcasts, that you love music. So the more the merrier.
If you follow Volgamut on Facebook, people will be able to find this, no problem.
That's right. Okay. And I've never played with them before. I've played unofficially with Misha for years, just for fun. So this is our first time to actually do it together at a fair publicly, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, one of my favorite fair memories back at the Florida Renaissance Festival many years ago is you, Misha from Volgamut, myself, my wife Abby, and a few other musicians got together and started playing early music in the morning, which ended up becoming the Florida Renaissance Fair, you know, early morning, early music consort.
I
directed for a few years, and that was just a wonderful coming together of musicians. And that was one of my favorite things about fair. When you get together, you play this beautiful period music, and you interact with other musicians.
Nothing more fun than that.
It's magical.
That's the best. It is. Absolutely, it is. What a good time.
One of my favorite fair moments. What about you? Do you have a favorite fair moment?
Honestly, that's one of them, I have to say. Yeah. I would agree with you. It's absolute magic. It's a smaller group of people and perhaps a little more unofficial. We do that sometimes at the New York Renaissance Fair. And you know, I really do enjoy, you know, playing by myself and being able to be right there on the street instead of on a stage, where I can visit one-on-one with people, and give people the chance to ask me questions, to get to touch the harp. And just, I really do enjoy that individual working together. And that's a lot of fun. And boy, you know, every day is new. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I think back over the years of doing it, you know, there's so many moments that stand out. You know, I'll be playing something and somebody comes along who I didn't even see, and they just start dancing. Or, you know, so I remember one time an elderly lady was, you know, asking the people pushing her wheelchair to come up. And I was actually playing with a friend of mine who is a patron at the New York Fair, and he plays flutes and whistles and recorders and things. And we were playing and singing something kind of unofficially. And this lovely elderly lady in her 90s started singing with us. I think it might have been Wild Mountain Time that we were singing, and it just floored everyone around us. People just, you know, crowds of people just stopped, and it was really to listen to her. Mm-hmm. And just amazing. And she sounded like she was in her 90s, but it didn't matter. It was magic. And the fact that we all came together right there was really special.
That is very cool. So on your CD, the new CD, there's your version of The Minstrel Boy, but not just The Minstrel Boy. You're weaving in some other Celtic tunes as well. Can you tell me a little bit more about this piece?
Actually, just one other one. And I did this on purpose, again, kind of in the theme of the CD, because it's a juxtaposition of ideas. So in the tune, The Minstrel Boy, in a very Irish way, it's sort of a glorification of going to war, but they lose. Commonly so in Irish tunes, you know, all their wars are merry and all their songs are sad, mm-hmm. kind of like that. And so the minstrel boy who is, you know, strapping on his father's sword, which is a symbol of tradition, and taking his wild harp slung behind him into the battle, because music is what moves your soul. It's what reminds you of home and what you're sacrificing everything for. However, he is captured, and instead of allowing his harp to be captured and play for the enemy, he actually breaks it and says that it will never play, and my harp will never play in slavery. And so it's an interesting picture of war from the point of view of someone who's fighting with ideas rather than weapons. I've also interwoven it with Brian Boru's March, which is an ancient tune. Brian Boru was the kind of legendary, kind of historical figure of one of the High Kings of Ireland from centuries ago, during the time that the Vikings were making repeated attacks on the islands in that area. And legend has it that he held the Vikings out of Ireland his entire life. He was an undefeated champion. And so, of course, his warriors were naturally, they liked that. Being non-defeated is always nice. But they were legendary, and they protected the people. And there's nothing about that tune that is anything other than very martial and very, you know, moving the soldiers to battle. And so I interwove the two, really, to kind of maybe think of it as an idea of maybe a young boy seeing the warriors march off and always come back victorious, and, you know, like little boys sometimes do, you know, playing with that idea, and, you know, go outside and hit each other with sticks and wooden swords and things, and getting all excited about that, but really not having an idea what's going on. And as he gets older, realizing that what they're doing is potentially sacrificing their lives and everything about what they have in order to protect their homes and families. And so he's beginning to see the other side of it, and gradually weaving the minstrel boy and Brian Boru together with still the desire and the uplift to go out and fight, but at the same time starting to get the idea that maybe it's not always victorious. Maybe you don't get the outcome that you wanted. Maybe sometimes you're sacrificing for an idea rather than actually getting what you hoped for. And then having that kind of come through, maybe the songs working together until you get near the end of the song and it starts to fade back into separate tunes, like maybe as an old man looking back on his career in an army and thinking about it. So that was kind of the idea behind that song. Thank you.
So we're just hearing The Minstrel Boy, interweaved with Brian Boru's March from Kathleen Finnegan's latest CD, there in the quiet Greenwood. That a rendition, I like that. That's brilliant. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Kathleen, earlier this season, I interviewed Jessica Browning. Jessica lives on a boat with her husband, two harps, and her newborn son, Rumi Soul. And she talked about doing concerts with her newborn, having to care for him and actually him becoming part of the show, actually, because he had to be right there. And that made me think of you during the interview. And we actually talked about you a little bit, because I remember when your daughter Naomi was born a few years ago, same thing. She was always there. You had her like wrapped up with you when you were playing. And I mean, she just turned out to be just a wonderful young lady. And I think you're both onto something here.
We were kind of working our way along, figuring it out. But wow, I look back on it and I wouldn't have done a thing different. Yeah. Naomi was born actually 3 weeks into the New York Renaissance Festival in August. And so my lovely friend Sarah Mullen was there playing harp sort of unofficially at the time. She had joined her husband and then came on later full-time playing. But there, she filled in for me for 3 weeks. And Naomi was born on the 17th. That was a Wednesday. And the following Monday, we packed up and drove from Florida to New York with our newborn. And then Hurricane Irene came in. So we had one day of show. We played on Saturday, and then the hurricane came in, knocked Sunday out, and gave us a little bit of time to have one day with her. And I held her a lot on stage, and then we kind of went to it the following weekend. But what I did, I had a cradle that has been passed down through my children. I have children ranging at this point from 34 to 9. And my father had made a cradle for one of my older children. And we brought that with us. It's beautiful and handmade. And that was on the stage with me, along with a rocking chair. And Naomi would sleep in her bed because she was little, or if I needed to care for her while she was not sleeping, I would either put her in a sling that I would strap on me and play, you know, over her head with her up against me, or if she needed my full-on attention, then I would sit in the rocking chair and rock her or walk her. And beloved friends, mostly cast members from the New York Fair would come through and offer to hold her, and they would sit in the rocking chair with her on my little stage while I played, and we talked to people. And she grew up with harp and friends from the Renaissance Fair right there holding her and loving her. Her beloved fairy grandmother was with us almost constantly. She is a lovely lady who's a patron at the New York Fair and participates in other fairs. And she has a fairy character and held Naomi a lot. And so Naomi grew up as our fairy baby. But it has had a remarkable effect on her. She doesn't know a stranger. She absolutely loves everything about the fair and the people there. She, as I've had other people say to me, she walks to the beat of her own drum. And I would say she does. But on the other hand, she's very good at listening to other people's drums as well, and very caring about people and very accepting of people from all backgrounds. It doesn't matter if they're fairy or human, or if their hair is green or their ears stick out or they have seven tails. Or if they're just dressed like anybody would who's, you know, walking around downtown. She's fine with all of it.
No tails, right?
That's okay, right. Too. No tails is okay, too.
Do you think she'll be a harp player one day?
I don't know. She's interested in music, and she, of course, has been singing since she could get her mouth open, and she likes playing with lots of instruments right now. Mm-hmm. I think she will learn to play the harp, amongst other things. I've been pushing her to be a fiddle player because we kind of need a fiddle player in the band. So we'll see if she follows along with that. But she's very musical, loves all sorts of music and singing and instruments, dance.
So the last song on your CD is The Parting Glass, which is a great Irish song, a great closing piece. Can you tell us about your rendition?
Yes, I did one thing that is probably not very weird, and I'm sure other people have done it, but I'm not familiar with coming across it. And that is, I changed the key from the standard mode it's in to set it in a slightly different place, so it's lower pitched. I probably haven't told a lot of people that most of my harps are actually not tuned to 440. Sometimes I do when I know I'm going to be playing with other people, but when I'm playing by myself, I tune my harp to a lower frequency. And that was partly what I was doing with that tune as well, was bringing down the frequency. Because I think that the calming of one's heart and soul is such an important thing and so unusual in our world, and particularly with some of the things that have been going on the last few years, and just the sadness and difficulty that people have been experiencing. And I would like the harp not to be part of that. I would like the harp and music in general, and the sharing of music together, to be something that brings people peace, that brings them to a place of calmness and a centering for their souls. In The Parting Glass here, which is lovely, we chose not to have a singer, just because I wanted people to listen to the music. If people want to go look up the words, they certainly can, but it's about saying goodbye, but in a good way. In a healing way and an encouraging way that looks forward to the future. And my husband, Brett, is playing with me on that tune. He's on not every track. He's on some tracks on my new CD. He's playing bass and he's playing guitar. Said I have my lovely friend Bettina, who is singing on a few tracks. So there are people sharing it with me, and there's some solo as well. But this particular one, I wanted to be interactive. And as an ending to the CD, the ambient sound behind it is the crashing of waves and looking out over the cliff as the sun goes down. Well, you can tell I'm from the West Coast, so I'm used to sunsets over the ocean. But the idea of looking out over the ocean as the sun goes down and maybe imagining what's on the other side, and that there's human activity, and that there's people, and there's more out there than we know about, and the exploration and the excitement of finding out about other people and learning to love other people is so important.
That is just such a a touching rendition. You play that so wonderfully, and Brett, he's all right too. Yeah,
that's what I tell him.
Yeah, good. That's cool. Yeah, he's well known for his stage shows as a magician and a comedian, but he's a really good musician.
He is, and actually, well, we're on hiatus to a large extent from Renaissance fairs. That's mostly what he's doing is music.
Well, I'd like to play one more piece of music from you. This isn't from the new CD, but I love this tune and I love your version of it. Can you introduce the Fairy Queen?
Absolutely. This is not unknown, but perhaps a lesser known piece by Turlough O'Carolan, the wonderful blind Irish harpist and composer from approximately the time of Mozart, to give you context. Obviously, within the idea of what we're doing with the CD, although this tune is not on it, it fits very well with the topic. But the Fairy Queen is maybe an idea of what someone who rules the fairies might be like, and we often think of fairies as small and flighty and, you know, wings and flitting about here and there. And this actually is a very dignified piece. It's a little bit different way of looking at perhaps a regent of the fairies. And it meanders a little bit, but always kind of comes back to a central theme of a circular idea. And if you listen to it, you will hear a lot of the music almost going in circles. I'm not describing that very well. Jay would know exactly what I'm talking about with as far as the way your hand moves on the strings, but I think you can hear that too. So there's a lot of small circles with larger circles around them. Also, the chord structure is very circular, and I love that. To me, that's a symbol of beginning and not just coming back to the same place, but a continuation. So there are some symbols of eternity that use circles. And I think that's very lovely, but the piece is beautiful too. You will hear it played sometimes with a fourth section. I'm only playing three. Scholars are fairly sure that the fourth section was actually written by someone else and attached to the piece later. So I have not included that part, even though it is beautiful. I tried to keep it as traditional, what might have been played by Turlough O'Carolan as possible. But it is one of my favorite pieces, and I love to play it. So thank you, Jay, for including it. Thank you.
So that is the Fairy Queen. Kathleen Finnegan, our guest today on the podcast, thank you so much for being here. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Jay. I'm very honored and thoroughly enjoy it.
Great. We're going to include links to your website and your Facebook page so people can find out more about you, perhaps purchase some of your music, find out where you're going to be playing in the future. And I look forward to playing with you again. Hopefully, perhaps next year down in Florida, we'll be able to play together again.
I certainly hope so. It is actually one of the things I think so fondly about down there, playing with you and Abby and the group of wonderful musicians we have there, the Florida Fair.
Well, thank you very much. Well, until I see you again, safe travels, and thank you.
Thank you, and you as well.
If you have questions or guest suggestions, please email me at openingtheharpchakra@yahoo.com. We've also included links to PayPal and Venmo if you'd like to contribute to the production of this endeavor. Please subscribe, please share, please tell your friends. In the coming weeks, we have more beautiful harp music from all around the world. I'm Jay Michaels. Thank you very much. Peace. Namaste.